You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the pandemic has been giving sports leagues around the country some major headaches. Games have been rescheduled or suddenly canceled. Seasons cut short, no fans in the stands, just to name a few. We'll look at how the NFL and NBA and college sports are trying to push ahead. Now, today is a usually overlooked milestone in our country's schedule for installing a president. Safe Harbor Day is meant to be the day that states have wrapped up loose ends related to their popular votes for president. Looks like most states will have met that goal, except Wisconsin, possibly. Despite dozens of losses and court challenges to the results of the election, including one just moments ago in the U.S. Supreme Court, Trump's legal team and other actors, including now the Attorney General of Texas, continue to wage a legal battle. You can join in with your thoughts on the post-election at 800-642-1234. How closely are you following recounts and legal challenges to the election results? Now that states have certified their votes, are you ready to move on from the election, I should say? What do you think about the president's refusal to concede? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Laura M. Brown is Associate Professor and Director of the Graduate School of Political Management at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Laura, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on today.
Before we get into kind of the step-by-step of the latest news going on, Laura, I want to kind of put this in perspective a little. I mean, it's easy to get caught up in, you know, these court proceedings, but this is a big change in the way we usually do presidential elections, right? I mean, the remedies here involve canceling tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of votes selectively, or just tossing out state elections and handing it over to state legislatures. This is not the normal way we do things, right?
It is not. I mean, we have had election controversies in our history. Certainly, we can look back to 1876. That election resulted in an electoral commission being created by Congress to resolve the disputes in four different states' electoral ballots because of underlying questions about the popular vote. But those instances are rare, and we are in another one of those rare moments where it appears that despite all evidence, the president and his team have decided that the election was not legitimately run and ballots were not fairly cast. Every sort of authority on this matter has, in fact, agreed that this was one of the best elections that has ever been run. And all of these controversies that have been brought to legal fora are really, they have no merit and there is no standing.
All right. Now getting to the day by day here. Every 4 years, Laura, we celebrate this Safe Harbor Day. It's a big, oh no, wait. It's this thing that just kind of floats by us. We don't notice it. What is Safe Harbor Day? Why is it important this year?
So the Safe Harbor deadline was established in the wake of that controversial 1876 election and was part of what was called the Electoral Vote Act of 1877. And what it really did was say that all related disputes that are in the states need to be resolved 6 days before the Electoral College meets and those electors cast their ballots. And the idea was that in the United States, states are the ones who have the authority to certify votes. Those votes should be certified. Those electoral slates should be understood as being for one party or another. And they should be identified so that when basically next week on the day that they vote on the electoral during the Electoral College, there is clarity about which electors are going to cast ballots and which party's presidential nominee will win those ballots.
As we're hearing in our state news today, Wisconsin, it looks like, won't meet that safe harbor deadline because at least one of the key court cases is going to be considered tomorrow after the deadline. Does that make the electoral outcome from Wisconsin vulnerable to change by someone? If so, who?
Well, right now, about the only person I think it could be vulnerable to change to is a recent Supreme Court case that was filed by the Attorney General in Texas, who is seeking to invalidate Wisconsin's votes. This is not a case that anyone believes the Supreme Court will take up or will side with the Texas Attorney General. But I think what you essentially have here is that there is more opportunity for mischief so long as the states have yet to certify their vote count.
Talking to Laura Brown from the George Washington University, looking at the latest in the post-election ongoing legal challenges, the slow, gradual steps toward an electoral college vote. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reaction to some of the latest news, what you want to see happen, and what questions you have about how all this stuff works. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Well, speaking of the Supreme Court, Laura, we just saw news, and you mentioned it to us, too. The Supreme Court rejected an effort coming from Pennsylvania to overturn that state's election outcome. The Supreme Court rejected that in a one-line document, it looks like. Can you talk about that challenge and why it wasn't taken up?
Well, look, at the end of the day, most of these challenges have included complaints that suggest there is widespread fraud or that there is something untoward about mail-in ballots. And neither of those things have really any evidentiary basis. There is no fraud that anyone has seen at any systematic level in any state in this election. There just is not evidence of that. And really, there is no problem with mail-in ballots. Granted, there are sort of rules and procedures about when different states could pass laws to change or alter the mail-in ballot opportunity for voters. And that's part of what has been at question in Pennsylvania, because essentially Pennsylvania changed its laws in relation to the COVID pandemic. And so there was some question about whether they did this at too late of date to make voters aware of this new opportunity for voting. But what has come back is twofold. One, the courts have said everything has been fine in terms of when the state legislature made these changes. The other thing that has come back is that the actual votes that are in dispute are not enough to overturn the actual outcome in Pennsylvania, which then, in fact, makes much of the suit moot.
Now, as you were saying earlier, Laura, a lot of people are looking at this election and saying, yeah, this was a pretty well-run election, a pretty clean election. Courts rejecting claims of fraud for not having enough evidence. But the president and some Republicans and some media supporters making a very aggressive case that this was a fraudulent or rigged election. Do you worry about what that means for, I don't know, faith in the election system from a significant chunk of the American people?
I do worry about it, because at the end of the day, any system of government is only as legitimate as the people believe it is. In other words, if we know that this election has been run sort of under the various rules and state laws that exist, and we have faith that those election officials did their job well, which everyone has said that they have, it then becomes problematic when people just say, no, it's been done poorly, or it was bad, or it was unfair and it was rigged. Even if they don't have any evidence, the lack of faith in the system then creates a cloud over the entire system and makes people feel more cynical about government writ large.
Now, the Trump campaign and supportive legal efforts have struck out mostly in the courts. By some counts, 50 courts rejected their arguments, or 50 cases have been rejected. his legal team in some cases and supporters, President Trump's legal team and supporters have looked to state legislatures to try to step in and overturn the outcomes of the election in their respective states, Michigan, Pennsylvania. There was talk at some point about Wisconsin. Is that something that state legislatures can do? Does it vary state to state?
Well, so it is interesting in that the Constitution directs basically the states to determine the method by which electors are selected. So in our history and in the past, we actually have had state legislatures selecting electors. But there is one sort of key principle to all of this, and that is that it has to be clear to voters and to candidates prior to the running of the election, what is the method by which electors are going to be chosen? So the problem for these Trump supporters who are asking the state legislatures to now throw out the popular vote is that they're doing it after the election occurred. And what that means is they're saying, really, we want to do it a different way because we don't like the outcome. And that will not stand the legal test because they needed to make transparent and make known the method by which they selected those electors prior to the November election date.
We're talking to Lara Brown from the George Washington University about the state of the Trump campaign's legal challenges to overturn the election, as well as some of the political events between now and Inauguration Day next month. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. What would you like to see from the Republican Party at this time and coming out of this election? What plans do you have for watching the inauguration if you're planning to? How important is having a smooth process from election to inauguration to your idea of what a healthy democracy looks like? You could join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with political scientist Lara Brown from the George Washington University. We're looking at the post-election period we're in, the safe harbor deadline, and unsuccessful legal challenges aimed at overturning the results of the election in many states, including Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, and reactions. David joins us now in Milwaukee. David, hi.
Hello. How are we doing today?
Good. What do you want to bring up, David?
Well, I am curious as to how the attorney general from the state of Texas has standing to sue the state of Wisconsin regarding its election outcome.
David, thanks a lot for the call, Laura. I think a lot of people asking, that question.
I think that is an excellent question. I mean, they are essentially saying that that these states, Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, somehow violated the U.S. Constitution's election clause and how they handled their elections. Therefore, it has an injury, on the state of Texas because their votes did not then matter, I guess. But I'm saying that sort of coming off of trying to read this sort of digest of this filing, and it does seem to me to be bizarre legal theory because I do not imagine that any state would have the authority to determine what another state did.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Tom now in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I've got, I guess, a follow-up question about the Texan Attorney General. Is it conceivable that his zealousness is based on, because he himself is under a legal cloud now, could he be angling for a pardon potentially from the president?
That's certainly an interesting theory. I don't know. I mean, this is where your political savvy is probably as good as mine. I think what we know is that the attorney general has filed this request with the Supreme Court, and I imagine that they will very quickly dispatch it in much similar fashion to the one they just did in Pennsylvania, which had at least on face a bit more substance to it.
Tom, thanks for the call. And yeah, it's hard to assess somebody's motives, Laura. But can you talk about the Republican Party response from members of Congress and other prominent officials? We've seen some criticize the Trump team and their efforts here. Some support it and some in the middle. Can you talk about the position Republicans find themselves in right now?
Well, I think if you're a Republican, you really should be concerned, because what you see is the beginnings of a Republican Party dividing or breaking half. I mean, I think, you know, people use that term civil war, I think too often, but there is a very real prospect that the Republican Party is at war with itself, and they are dividing between those who are loyal to President Trump and those who are loyal to Republican principles and the political system. And I just, when I look forward into the future, I would not be surprised to see there be some kind of division where you end up with a third party being created. Let's, you know, look back in history and remember that this was precisely how the Republican Party was founded, because of the split in the Whig Party, which Millard Fillmore actually helped to lead. And he became part of the Know-Nothings. And then the Republican Party began and was founded, and John Fremont was their first nominee.
Thanks for that call. We are talking to Laura Brown from the George Washington University, looking at the latest post-election news. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Dennis is with us in Milwaukee. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I only had one question as to why we still have the Electoral College.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Laura, why do we have the Electoral College still?
Wow, that's an entire conversation. Yeah. But I will say this, that the easiest way to think about the Electoral College is to think about it like the World Series as opposed to the Super Bowl, right? In the Super Bowl, we have one score, we have one outcome. In the Electoral College, it works much the way that the World Series does, in that you have to win four games to, in fact, win the World Series. You cannot just win one game by a lot of runs. And this is where what the framers were trying to do was to make sure that the House of Representatives represented the people, the Senate represented the states. And if you look at the Electoral College, what it does is represent the people through their states. So it in and of itself is a compromise that represents the larger structural compromises of our national political institutions.
Now, some people have been saying, hey, the Electoral College is being kind of stretched pretty thin here. President Trump in 2016 loses the popular vote by about, 3 million votes, ends up with 306 electoral votes. Joe Biden wins the popular vote by just over 7 million at this count, comes away with 306 electoral votes. I don't know. People have been criticizing that. It's not likely to change anytime soon, though, is it?
Well, look, I think one of the things that's important to realize is that since 1860, really since our Republican and Democratic parties formed as a two-party system, what we basically have is that we have a situation where when a presidential candidate wins a majority of the popular vote, meaning 50% or more of the popular vote, they win the Electoral College. But when a presidential candidate only wins a plurality, meaning that they win under 50%, then what happens is the Electoral College essentially reverts to which candidate won the most states. So one of the things that's important to realize is, yes, Hillary Clinton and Al Gore won many more votes than did their opponents who won the presidency. They each only won about 48% of the total popular vote, which means that 52% of the popular vote, in fact, voted against them. And so it's so important to realize that this is where and why people voting for independent candidates or third-party candidates can play a role in the outcome.
In our last couple minutes, Laura, I want to look ahead. What are the next milestones from now till Inauguration Day that you're watching for?
Well, so obviously the Electoral College does vote on December 14th. We will see electors gather typically in their state capitals to basically cast their ballots and then send them to Congress. Congress will not count those ballots until January 6th in a joint session of Congress that is presided over by the Vice President of the United States, serving in his role as President of the Senate. It is the new Congress and the old Vice President. This is where we are likely to see, I imagine, some additional members of Congress who are part of the President's party trying to make some claims or some sort of protest. But I also would hope and believe that Vice President Mike Pence will uphold the tradition of a peaceful transition of power, count the ballots as they were cast, and we will move forward to an inauguration on January 20th.
And we'll leave it there. Laura, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
We've been talking to Laura M. Brown, Associate Professor and Director of the Graduate School of Political Management at the George Washington University. We talked to her today about where the electoral process for president goes from here, as well as some of the latest legal challenges from the president to overturn the results of the election in many states around the country.